Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So welcome, Paul.
Hello, Paul, and hello, everyone. Have we all survived the week? Your brain's fried, Paul?
I'm not sure I've survived. We had a good bounce this morning, but unfortunately, I got caught on a company that I bought only last week. So on to that. That was treat, but we'll come on to that soon. But before we get into that, obviously, it has been extremely volatile last 7 days, largely because of Trump sort of pirouetting on all his trade tariffs, flip-flopping left and right. Just sort of like taking a step back, what are your latest views on all of this sort of volatility and any sort of like key takeaways for investors?
Before I get into that, Paul, I've got you coming through in feedback on another computer, so literally give me 10
okay
seconds.
Yeah, sure, go on. He's terrible, Paul. He gets his technology all sorted. So apologies. We'll have a quick little sojour, so to speak. Anyway, we'll carry on. My view, sort of like on the tariffs, as a sort of like a sort of couple of key takeaways is one. Then, you know, it's very difficult for investors to time the market because we've been going up and down, you know, constantly during this last sort of like 7 days. And who knows what's coming out the White House. So it's time in the market rather than sort of like, you know, trying to time it. Go on then, Paul. You're next.
No, finish your point, Paul. I was
okay.
Listening to
you. Okay, well, there's that one. And then the second one I would say is that there actually has been, you know, a lot of sort of like flux in the bond market, largely because of hedge funds having to basically become distressed sellers and traders. So what's sort of like caused a lot of sort of like this volatility, this severe, is people being forced selling. And I would say for investors, and I know we've talked about this one, don't trade on margin unless you absolutely have to, because I mean, it's like this morning, I was on the wrong side of treat, but the shares, and we'll come onto it, were down 33%. If I was on margin, I'd be forced to sell, and I don't want to sell. So yeah. That don't get caught. And a lot of very smart hedge fund managers have been caught over the past week. And you see that in the bond market because it's led to a sell-off in gilts as well as treasuries. And the last point I would make, which is actually quite good, is that I do believe the Trump put his back because he blinked and he decided actually, yes, rather than actually going full bore on all the tariffs, because the bond market was getting sold off and because of people talking about recession, then basically he took the foot off the gas. And it's a man-made issue, this tariff volatility, and therefore there should be a man-made solution. But Trump having the back of the market when it comes to extreme, along with the Feds, must give people sort of like confidence, which is one of the reasons why I think the US market's sort of like rebounded so strongly. Anyway, that would be my sort of three pennies worth. What about yours, Paul?
Yeah, very much agree. It's not like the pandemic when it was an external thing that we couldn't control. As you say, this is man-made. And I mean, how many times do we have to learn the same point, which is that you can't believe what Trump actually says?
Yeah.
You know, you have to look at what he does. And when faced with a potential meltdown in the bond markets, he was forced to back down. And so that in itself is a real breakthrough, but it certainly doesn't solve this issue, does it? It's likely to rumble along. So we're obviously going to have continued volatility, maybe not quite as bad as we've experienced. So I think it's lanced the boil to a certain extent. And but we're going to get a lot more problems for sure, aren't we? Because you can't just change the whole globalized interconnected economy overnight and switch off trade with particular countries. I mean, it would do so much damage to the American economy. So partially bluster, partially true. You know, there's always a grain of truth in everything he says, I think, but only a grain very often. And I think we can, to a certain extent, focus on other things. Companies are updating us on their exposure to tariffs, which I think is very good. But unfortunately, probably at the behest of the PR companies, they're merging and muddling general trading conditions with the specifics of tariffs, which is unhelpful. You know, we all know that tariffs are going to disrupt sentiment and the economies generally. But what I want to hear from companies is, are you selling physical goods into America? And if so, tell us how tariffs will affect you, or even how it's going to affect the competition. There are some companies that may benefit from their competitors being hit with higher tariffs, but it's only obviously for companies that are selling goods into America. And my co-writer Dave today mentioned another point, which is that the thing we really need to worry about in my view and Dave's view is if this spills over into a tit for tat escalation of taxes and fees on services, you know, particularly digital services, then it could get a lot more messy, I think, couldn't it?
Yeah, I'll be surprised if that, because there's a huge surplus that America has on digital services around the world. So he's probably not wanting to.
Oh, no, I didn't mean them implementing them. I meant the EU, for example.
Oh, okay.
Punitively slapping on massive taxes on the US tech giants. You know, that is something that worries me. But
yeah. It's certainly certainly changed supply chains, because there's been a buildup of manufacturing and stocking up before the implementation of the tariffs, and probably given, you know, they've got extra sort of inventory, you're probably going to have a soft patch as well in the following 3 months. But it all depends on sort of like that order flow and how much sort of stock build and how perishable the goods are. You can guarantee masses of Chinese goods have been stuffed into America before the tariffs are put in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this could be one of the reasons why Volex just recently reported ahead of expectations a flourish of activity in Q4, which, as you say, might well have been them ramming through as much as they could at the customer's request, you know, into America. So, yeah, it'll be interesting how it all plays out. But the thing I think to keep mainly focused on is the fact that UK small and a lot of mid caps have had a massive sell-off, not just in the last week, but this has been going on for 3 years in small caps. Mm-hmm. So your valuations on a lot of these things are extraordinarily attractive, and the vast majority are coming through with inline or even ahead updates. So the value opportunity this has all thrown at us, I think, is stunning.
Yeah, well, certainly. Let's move to one stock that's had a profit warning this morning, and we both talked about it last week. I bought it about sort of 7 to 10 days ago. It's Treat. It does flavors and food ingredients that go into sort of fizzy drinks, all natural. And also coffees and teas. About 50 to 55% of revenues are citrus related. And I think a big chunk, probably around about 40%, goes into the US. Anyway, it was a value play last week, and now it looks like a value trap, unfortunately. So I've suffered a sort of like a 33% decline in the share price. How do you see this? This isn't, well, it's one of those things. It's an occupational health of you know, sort of hazard of being an investor. What's your view of the business? Used to be thought of as a very high quality company.
Yeah, well, I've actually been buying today. It's sort of been in the back of my mind that this is an interesting, decent company over the long term. I mean, it's a company I've followed for many years. Lord Lee originally got me onto this. He has a big holding in it, very long term. He always said it's more of a chemicals company, really, a specialist chemicals company. There are only three or four significant competitors, I believe. Now, the way I look at it is that today's update was a mild profit warning. It guided to fresh guidance. This is, I think, September 25 year end. So it was an H1 trading update, and the H1 profit roughly halved. 53% down, I think it was, but H1 is the seasonally quieter half, because it sells more obviously in the in H2. You've got the summer, which is when it's selling a lot more, soft drinks to people than in the winter. And I think it looks really attractive value now. The full year guidance is now, I think, for an operating profit of between 16 and 18 million. Annoyingly, it didn't give then in brackets what the previous guidance was. It so infuriates me when companies do this. It's silly. They've got the number. Why not tell us? But anyway, I dug through some information. I reckon the previous number was probably about 20 and a half. So if you take the midpoint, that's 17 million new guidance. This is, was it operating profit or profit before tax?
It was, that was PBT. You're right. You're right. I had the same figure.
Yeah, right. So it's about a 17% drop, I think, in the middle of the range guidance, which is not a disaster, because you've got to remember that it would only take a relatively small revenue miss to make profits go down 17%. It's far from a disaster. So I was talking to my new co-writer, John, and I said, look, we're obviously keen investors, so we talk about, we're not only researching them to report on them, we're thinking about whether we should be buying them as well. I said, on a day when the FTSE is going to be up 5%, I think this will drop 10%. So I couldn't believe it when I saw it was down 36%. This has got all the, looking at the trades though, Paul, this has got all the hallmarks of an institution bailing out in the market. And it might be Liontrust. I think they are a 1% fall in their holding today from 2 days ago. So maybe they've just said, do you know what? We're out. Just dump them at any price. And those can be fabulous buying opportunities, actually. So I don't think this is a disaster. And I do think you'll get your money back with a bit of patience, actually.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. I mean, I haven't been selling. I've just been holding, and I haven't been adding to my position either. I haven't got any cash to add to my position. But just give you some bit of figures on it, okay? Now, if we look at like-for-like sales, right, which is a key indicator, in H1 2024, so this was like, 12 months ago, just 12 to 18 months ago, sales were down about 7% like for like. In H2, they were up 13%. So it went from negative of 7. So in H2, they went up 13%, which is what really got piqued my interest. I was thinking, right, okay, he's turned this one round. And then what they said this morning is that like-for-like sales were down 10%. So they've gone from negative 7 to plus 13 to negative 10. And given their guidance going forward, they're expecting like-for-like of 6% increase in H2, okay, which will be down slightly year on year. Now, the main reason seems to be because of the US market and down trading. And what they're pointing to is such that, customers have basically taken out their formulation for the citrus flavors, all natural, out of their product because of the cost price of orange juice. Okay, and so consequently, because it has been high because of sort of disease in the, I think it's the Florida crop and stuff like that, it's now coming down. Okay, so you can see a bounce going on, but big picture wise, I was a bit disappointed simply because I thought the quality of this business was better than I had anticipated, simply because I thought the product and the formulations would be more sticky into actual customers sort of their drinks formulations. I thought once they're in there, they're never going to get taken out. Yeah, it looks as though they have the option to down trade and to swap out rather than actually go for, sort of orange juice. They can go for a cheaper sweetener, which goes into it. And let me just put the orange juice prices on because it's, I think it's quite important. Let me just present it, put it on the screen. Where is it? Okay, let me put it on again. There it is. share screen. Okay, orange juice price. Here we go. I think this is your favorite website. This is Trading Economics.
Oh. Yes.
So what you see is basically you've got your orange juice prices all last year going up to around about $500, you know, basically per frozen per $500 or $600. And then it's come down. And so you can see during this first half, which is September to March, we have had high prices all that time. But they did say when they did the full year results of last year that actually they'd been doing a lot of reformulations that had worked, which has gave me confidence. When this price now starts coming down, I thought, right, okay, they're going to be going gangbuster, or they should be, but it may have not hit them. They may have had them. I think there's a delay in customer procurement, and they buy ahead of it. And so consequently, I've got a sneaky suspicion they're still working off this old higher price. And so you would hope, in the second half, because if it's a lower price, they'll actually deliver their 6% like-for-like sales growth. And if they do that, I'm on with you. I think it will be, they'll be back to the races. But big picture-wise, I thought they were a higher quality business with more barriers to entry for competitors who did this sort of flavoured citrus juice. But anyway, that's my take. I'm still going to hold, but I'm just not quite as positive as I thought it was, actually.
No, but I mean, the way I look at it, Paul, 17 million PBT instead of 20 million, it's not a major structural problem, I would suggest. That to me, the other point that we haven't covered is that the rest of the update today was actually bullish on the order book and the pipeline.
Yeah.
Which suggests to me that this is some sort of temporary problem. For whatever reason, and the reasons you gave, I thought were interesting. So I always try and distinguish in a profit warning, is this something that fundamentally going wrong with the business that's going to get worse? Or is it just a glitch? And to my mind, I'm guessing to a certain extent, this sounds more like a glitch than something going seriously wrong. And the other thing is, it's got a strong balance sheet. It's about neutral in net cash, net debt. It's announced a £5 million buyback today, which is about 3% of the market cap. Okay, not a huge amount, but it hoover up a bit of loose stock from the market, maybe. No debt issues to worry about. It's got completely modernized, updated factories. It spent big on CapEx in the last few years. So they've got, I believe, sort of best in breed manufacturing facilities, particularly in the UK. I don't know what the facilities in America are like. And you're now only paying par with net tangible asset value. Mm-hmm. So I think this, once the shock has subsided, I think this could look like a nice attractive entry point, I think, for TET. But you never know where the bottom's going to be, do you? And you've just got to flush out the weak holders, and that can take some time. So I have bought a medium-sized position, but I'll buy more if it drops any further. It's one of those ones where I think risk-reward now is actually better than it was yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the price, the orange juice price, supports that improved pipeline, because you can see how customers now realize that actually it's a lot, that the prices of their products will be a lot cheaper. So you can absolutely get it. It was just that I think it wasn't the fundamentals of the business that deteriorated. It was my understanding wasn't as good as I thought it was. I'd presumed actually they had more pricing power because they can pass these on costs on, and it looks as though they haven't. Not because of the quality of their products, it's simply because of the substitutional ability of these end, you know, drinks manufacturers. They can swap out orange juice into, you know, another cheaper.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, we covered that point before, didn't we? I think as well, long term, it's got a good long term track record of being a sound, established business that seems to be well run. I don't think it's ever made any losses. I'm just calling up some figures. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the long-term history of this going back 10 years, it's a successful business. It's not a basket case or a disaster at all. I think we're getting an opportunity to buy a quality business that's had a bit of a bump in the road at a knockdown price. So that's exactly the type of thing I look for.
Yeah. So,
thumbs up from me, and bad luck, Paul. Without wishing to rub salt in the wounds, though, I think for me personally, I never buy until there's an up-to-date trading update.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I was looking at the numbers now, even though the downgraded ones, I'm getting a PE of about 10.1 on currently, and a dividend yield of 4%. So it's deep in value territory. Yeah, good. Yes. Okay, if anybody wants to ask Paul or myself any questions, then please put them in the chat box and I'll read them out. We've got one from Zoo. Look, he's asking about Churchill China, which I think does the crockery for sort of hospitality industry, things like pubs and restaurants, and a lot of their business, I'm guessing, is sort of like replacements when they get broken.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. I absolutely love this. It's one of my top picks at the moment. And okay. I should disclose, I do have a small starter size position on it. I'd like to buy more, but there's so many things I want to buy and there's only limited funds. I thought the results were excellent. They were out, was it yesterday, I think?
Yep.
8.5 million PBT, and this is a company that is only valued at, I put the wrong ticker in, 50 or 60 million, something like that. So here we are, Churchill China. Yeah, 62 million market cap after a big rise in the last couple of days. So you're on a forecast forward PE of 9.5 times. You've got a 7% dividend yield. You've got price to net tangible asset value at par. Again, the same as Treat will be after today's drop is taken into account. It's got a bulletproof balance sheet with net cash of about 20% of the market cap. This is Churchill China. And it owns the freehold site that it operates in Stoke-on-Trent, which is in the books. I checked the annual report yesterday. It's in the books at historical cost. So it would be interesting to find out what that site is worth. But you've got the asset backing there. And, of course, you don't then have to pay landlords rent or the financing charges. It's unencumbered. It's a lovely, traditional, family-run business. Even though, obviously, you can't think of anything worse than you, selling crockery into the hospitality sector, because it's absolutely on its knees, the sector. So to my mind, the fact that Churchill China can still make 70-odd million revenues and £8.5 million profit, that shows that you've got a really strong business there with pricing power. And the commentary, I read through all the commentary yesterday with the results, I think it was, or the day before. And they're saying exactly, you've obviously read them too, because they made the point about breakages. They said, oh, there's a steady amount of business coming through because the customers and the clients break the plates and there's a continuous stream of new order. So I'd like to know what percentage is breakages and what percentage is new establishments setting up. So that would be a good question to ask management. But I absolutely love it. I think this share, they do say, look, don't expect profits to rise unless there's a broader improvement in the hospitality sector, which to my mind makes obvious sense. You know, that's a given. But to my mind, you know, a sniff of a recovery in the hospitality sector, I think if we just tuck these shares away, which is what I've done, a few in my zip, tuck them away for two, three years, I think we could easily double our money and we'll collect in a 7% yield on the way. So hardly at any risk, I would say negligible risk of insolvency or dilution. Family controlled, you know, traditional company with the owner's eye. I love it. I think this is a fantastic little business. Over to you.
Yeah, the only question I would have is, you know, you mentioned about pricing power. What USPs does it actually possess to be able to give it that pricing power? Is it customer service? Is it the quality of their crockery? I mean, what is it?
It is, yeah, it's fast delivery. So you can order them and have them, you know, if you break a pile of plates, you can just order them and they have them in stock. So rapid delivery. But Wetherspoons use them, for example, and it's because they're heavy, they're stylish and they're heavy duty. Basically, they've got a lot of technical know-how within the business. It's been going since, I think, 1795, family owned and run. So there's a lot of know-how in this business, which of course is a big asset, but it's not on the balance sheet anywhere. Quite interesting, that, isn't it? The hidden goodwill, if you like, as opposed to purchase goodwill. These plates are very nice, attractive designs, and they're not unbreakable, obviously, because they have breakages, but they're sturdy and resilient and in service, and the customers love the product. And if they can sell plates to Wetherspoons, then that tells me they've obviously got a good product.
Yeah. Well, I guess they probably sell quite a bit in Greece and Turkey to their weddings, don't they? Because they have plate smashing weddings, don't they?
I was going to say that. But
oh, sorry. Right. Okay.
No, maybe not
politically correct. Okay. We've got a question from Ben Sharman. Another topical one because we briefly mentioned it. JD Sports, which had been on, obviously, a really bad sort of run of downhill and then came out with a semi sort of an inline and then semi guidance profit warning. The shares shot up 10% and they're up again another 8% this morning. So you were spot on yours. It was sort of like, they're so sold off. There's going to be a bounce. Anyway, how do you see this one going forward, Paul?
I'm very positive about it. I mean, I was braced, as I think we might have mentioned last week or the week before. I'm holding this one all the way down from about 95p, somewhere around that level. It's had two mild profit warnings in the last 6 months, but really not, you know, the forecasts were only lowered slightly. I don't think the massive sell-off in the shares down to a low of about 60p, I think, recently. I couldn't see any reason for it other than that a massive profit warning was in the pipeline. So I was braced for the update, which came through at noon yesterday. Stupid time to announce it, but they did schedule it. And much to my surprise, they said in line with expectations for January 25 year end, and they said current trading also in line, although there were some they said it's a tough market for trainers and athleisure, and I think they said that they're expecting a drop in revenues in the current financial year, so they're forecasting quite modestly, but you have to take that in the context of the PE, the forward PE being 5. Sound balance sheet with net cash, if you exclude leases, as obviously I do. And if you look at the long-term growth of this thing, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's been buying up its competitors and expanding a colossal number of new stores. I mean, this is JD Sports now is forecast to do, it's an 11 to 12 billion pound revenue business that makes a similar an 8-9% profit margin. It's a really good quality, successful business that's growing through acquisition, opens hundreds of new stores each year. I think it's a fantastic business. But everybody thought, but it's just been selling off. 51% owned by Pentland. So I suppose you could say there's no chance of a takeover bid unless Pentland themselves bid for it. I couldn't understand the valuation at all, but it seems to have been driven by people's fears over tariffs, because obviously the trainers are made in the Far East. JD Sports retails a lot of them in the US as well as the UK and Europe. So that people seem to have got fixated by that and really massively oversold the shares, I think. So I think I would say this because I held on and I own them and I believe the valuation's wrong. So I think the bounce of the last 2 days, as you see on your chart, it barely shows, does it? So I think there's a lot more to be had on the upside here. I mean, when it sells off to a PE of 5, that is the market saying for a share that should be on a PE of 10 or 12 in a static state, that is the market saying we think earnings are going to halve in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't make any sense at all to me, irrespective of tariffs. And it's looking increasingly obvious the tariffs thing is going to get resolved one way or another. Trainers, dead easy to shift production from one country to another. It's not a complex supply chain. You can, in many cases, the factories will be outsourced factories, just making the gear for, I used to work in the rag trade, and you can source gear from anywhere in the world. You're not tied into any suppliers, any factories at all. Now, it might be different if you're Nike, because you produce on such scale. But the clothing and footwear is one of the easiest things to shift production to anywhere in the world. So I think this is still very massively oversold. So, yeah, really bullish on it personally. So your take on it, Paul?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's on a PE of 6.2, so you're right. I mean, it still is, very, very cheap. But, I'll leave that with you because it's in the – I'm not an expert in retail, but I would say it does look as a sort of – has been over the long period as one of the real winners in this sector. And there should be no reason why it isn't, and on a really low valuation. If you like retail, this has got to be right up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trade for me. I don't want to hold it forever.
Yeah.
I just want the valuation to get to something, back to something a bit more sensible. £1.20, £1.30 would probably do for me. And then I'll recycle the money into something else.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to one of the pawnbrokers stroke retail. We've got Ramsden's, which put out numbers today. I know you'd spoken to H&T. This is the other one. It isn't as big, obviously, as a pawnbroker. Sells gold, which I think has driven profits, had an upgrade, and also does money as well, sort of like Forex, as well as the pledge book, etc. How do you see this one? It seems to be trading, again, about 8 times PE, 5.5 times dividend yield.
Yeah, very cheap. We like this one. One of my team wrote about this on that was Dave, I think, on the 8th of April. Was that was this week, wasn't it? Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah. We came out very positive on it. We both think it's dirt cheap. That was when it was £2.23. Do you know what they are now, Paul?
Yeah, they're 2.35.
Oh, it's up a bit, isn't it? Not a huge amount. So it was an ahead of expectations update, indicating now guidance. This is for March 25, PBT of 13 million. Lovely to see a company giving us proper profits, not EBITDA. I know that sets you off. So previous guidance was 12 million. So that's a million uplift in guidance. And Pamyor's upped the forecasts for next year as well, up them about 10%. It's got a really nice balance sheet, excellent balance sheet with net cash, which is really surprising given that they got the pledge book owned outright on top of that. We just think it's really good, really good value. And H&T we also like, so we like both of them. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I think they're just very, very cheap. And if we do go into tougher times, their pledge book would do all right. And both of them benefit from a higher gold price, which seems to be increasing given the level of volatility. So, yeah, I think they've got good real estate. There's very few real competition in pawnbrokers have got scale. So I think this is going to be a nice little niche for both of them to sort of mine. The problem I have with that both of them is that you're never going to get a high multiple for pawnbrokers on the re-rating. But that doesn't mean it can't make a good return, as an investment over sort of 5 years. So I think there's a bit of downside resilience in your portfolio, which is, I think both of them offer that sort of like, extra angle.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Paul. I think it's not a bad idea to have a few counter-cyclical things in a long-term portfolio, is it? That with both Ramsden's and H&T, you get nice divvies. You've got that counter-cyclical element, haven't you? You have a few Begbies and a few... What's the other one? FRP looks really good value as well. You have a couple of the insolvency guys, a couple of the pawnbroker guys. And then I think you've got you've added some resilience and some counter-cyclicality into a portfolio. So, yeah, I don't hold any of those, but I think they're all good.
Yeah. Another one, one in the industrial side that came out with some numbers is Photonics business, Gooch and House Co. And these guys sort of advanced sort of optical photonics parts and stuff that go into sort of like industrial lasers, which is still soft. They go into semiconductor manufacturing, which is still soft. But the areas which are doing well are aerospace and particularly defense. And I think also medicine is now starting to recover, having had for cosmetic surgery with sort of photonics and stuff. They came out with some numbers, and they did indicate, which I think were in line, and they did indicate that they didn't expect to have too much impact direct from the tariffs because they had some obviously manufacturing facilities in the US. How did you see it anyway?
Well, I've always written this one off a bit, really, but. One of my team looked at it this week as well. That was Tuesday. And John wrote about it. And when I was reviewing what he'd written, I thought, gosh, this looks good.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it issued 2 profit warnings last year. So it did look like one of these former darlings that had sort of gone off the rails a bit, really. But we took the view, this was an H1 trading update to March 2025. We took, as you say, correctly, it was in line with previous expectations. No change to forecasts from Cavendish. My notes here, we've got, it mentioned resourcing raw materials. I don't know quite what that point was about. And it's got some US manufacturing already. So I think the implication was it could navigate tariffs, but there might be some negative impact. We like the balance sheet. It's got 57 million net tangible asset value. That's over half the market cap. And net debt of 24 million is not is not outsized. It's a reasonable. So we think it's actually starting to look like quite a cheap turnaround. But I don't understand anything about the business. I have no idea what photonics even are. So what do you see a turnaround here? Have any of your fund managers flagged Gooch and House?
Odessa Stewart Whittlesome likes it. He owns it. I mean, photonics here is basically concentrated light beams that you can use to cut metal if you need to. You can knock out drones in the air, if you know, from on the top of a sort of like a ship and stuff like that. Use it as a drone zapper. Also, obviously, concentrated photonics for cosmetic surgery when you want to take out sort of like, I don't know, freckles, or you need, you know, some sort of like very, very sort of like high powered light to be able to help, you know, in certain procedures and stuff. So it is high value. I think they've been competing against quite a few of the Chinese, so they should actually benefit, given that a lot of the Chinese are going to have huge amounts of tariffs going into the States, and the States is the biggest market. So they might be a beneficial. One issue that I would have with it is how much is recurring revenue streams. And I'm not sure there is that much on that repeat revenue. I think it's sort of like it's mainly one off. There's not much servicing revenue. I think these guys provide assemblies, photonics assemblies that go into final products that then the service revenues are then derived from the final product. But that'd be my own take on it.
I wonder if it's one of these manufacturers though that gets in on a program, say for a 10 or 15 year lifespan for a particular medical equipment where they are the specified supplier and they have almost guaranteed repeating revenues. Do you think that might apply to this company?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, certainly a lot of them, if you've got sort of 5 to 10 years, then you're right. That's a good, so you do get good visibility. You don't get any service revenues, but you get good visibility. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, we don't really know much about it, but certainly just a high-level desktop review of the most recent numbers 2 days ago, we thought this definitely looks worth a closer look for us and for the readers and listeners. Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's move to one we don't talk about very much. It's a gaming company, which basically it's the old Team 17. It's called Everplay. It's come out with some quite good positive results. The sort of beauty, it's an indie game, so it's not these huge, great, big sort of rock star titles, but it's put a budget of about $1 million or $2 million to develop them. It has a large portfolio of products, back catalogue, that generate about two-thirds of its revenues, split between educational, industrial games and just normal player games. And it trades at roughly around about, I was just looking at it, 11 times PE, makes EBIT margins of 23%, because it's obviously a bit of a software company. It obviously, a lot of it though, is depending on the success of new games. But as I say, trading at 11 times PE with a good lot of, you know, good solid balance sheet, 63 million on the cash. Have you ever had a look at this one, Paul?
No, but I got one of my team to have a look at it, actually. Dave looked at it, and it used to be called, I've just found it while you were talking on my spreadsheet, it used to be called Team 17, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then it changed its name quite recently to Everplay. We've reported on it twice this year.
Yeah.
It was a slightly ahead trading update on 23rd of January. And then its calendar 24 results came out on the 26th of March, and it rose 16% on the day. These were very well received. Earnings per share was up 38% to 24p. Have you got the current share price on this one, Paul?
Yeah, it's £2.51.
Oh, it's come down from when we a little bit from when we. Yeah. Well, you can see then that's on a PE, as you say, just over 10. It also paid a maiden dividend, and not a huge amount, about 1% yield, and it said guidance marginally ahead for calendar 25. Now, the other thing I should mention is that we always focus on balance sheet strength a lot for downside protection, and it's got a nice balance sheet with no debt and £63 million cash at the end of 2024. So yeah, I wouldn't personally normally invest in gaming companies, but we think the numbers here look good, so worth people having a look at, I would say.
Charlie Nathan says they've shifted from game development to more publishing their own content, and he likes it, which is a comment from one of the guys. Now, he also asks about, and I know this is probably going to be a negative because it's got a bit of a checkered history, the Hut Group, THG, which I think sold off its online sort of delivery business, infrastructure business, and is now a pure beauty sort of website provider. I've not looked at this for ages, but give us your view. Charlie would like your view on THG.
Well, based on its entire history as a listed company, I think it's awful. Massively overhyped when it was floated at some insane valuation. I'm thinking, was it 5 to 8 billion or something?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
never made a profit. Yeah. Never made a profit. They've divested. I can't quite get my head around how they've structured the divestment, but it doesn't really matter because that apparently was the worst cash hemorrhaging part of the business. I find all of this company's announcements just false. I don't know. You know, it says, oh, we're cash generative. You look at the numbers, they're not cash generative.
Yeah.
I just don't believe anything they say, basically, because it doesn't tie in with the numbers. So I've been negative on this ever since it listed. Yeah, here we are. It announced my latest notes, and it were from 23rd of January, a trading update. It reckons it's going to be cash generative in future or from now on. Demerger of Ingenuity, that was it, completed. Yeah. But there's no revenue growth. That's the trouble. It's not. It's meant to be this fabulous growth company, but it's actually shrinking. So it's a low-quality, loss-making business. It's heavily indebted. I think there was a debt restructuring recently, wasn't there? Mm. And I think management are totally delusional when you look at the stuff they come out with in the press. The founder,
Matthew Moulding, I think, isn't it? Oh,
God almighty. Some of the stuff he comes out with. Do you know, there's no contrition with these sorts of people about how they've made a disastrous mess of running the company and the figures are diabolical. No contrition at all. It's all the fault of the city, of critical analysts who don't understand the business. And just awful. So, no, I think it's total junk, but I could be wrong. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I mean, online, I think just generally the online sort of like product, you know, sort of, you know, selling, et cetera, retailing is a really, really tough space.
It's particularly terrible,
isn't it? Particularly when you're competing against Amazon and Temu and, you know, all that kind of stuff and Shein. I mean, it just is like just so intense that you have to spend so much upfront marketing and your competitors are happy to make zero profit on it. So
I know. I mean, look at Gear for Music and Angling Direct. Yeah. You know, those were these great growth stocks. They really struggle to make any profit at all. And what's the point in making £1 million on 100 million revenues when you've got no product differentiation, nothing. It's just you're busy fools, I think. And it's finally dawning on all of us, really, 20, 30 years after the internet was created. It's not this gold mine for selling things. Actually, one of the supermarkets recently said, one of the big ones just said, online retailing is just a desert for profitability. Yes. So I'm really keeping it. And Boohoo's down to only 20 pence on a share, isn't it? They can't. None of these guys can make any money. ASOS, I think, probably ends up going bust.
Yeah.
THG, I think, probably goes bust eventually as well. These guys just can't make any money. So what's the point?
Yeah. Okay, let's move to healthcare. We've got David Raywood. He's asking about, which you don't talk about it, Oxford Biomedica, which I think is a gene therapy business that did a bit of a, it helped out with the pandemic virus production, I think, you know, Astra's and Pfizer's and stuff like that. But it's sort of key USP, I believe. It helps basically get sort of ingredients and, you know, sort of like with gene therapy cells into it helps get basically getting the change cells back into the patient once it's been doing it. It has these vectors that do it. It's really sort of high quality science. It's growing about 30% per annum, I believe, but it's still burning cash, and I think that's the issue. It may need a new fundraise. I don't know whether you've had a look at this one, Paul.
We did. We looked at this yesterday, actually, and it's totally outside our field of understanding in terms of the technology. We fully accept that, but we're just looking at the numbers. Calendar 24 figures, I didn't like them one bit. It's still generating very substantial losses, although, as you say, the revenue did rise. And the notes to the accounts reveal some stuff that isn't great. It's only got net cash of £21 million left. I think it's got about £60 million gross cash, but it's got a £40 million loan with Oak Tree Capital, the giant American investor, but that contains within the notes to the accounts a covenant requiring Oxford Biomedica to retain a minimum cash balance of 20 million. So it hasn't actually got that much headroom left, but it's still burning through cash at a rate of knots. So you're quite right. You've alighted on the, if that's the right word, the key issue here, which is cash burn and will it have to do another raise? I mean, the market cap's still substantial, 271 million we've got, but it's come down hugely, hasn't it, from the previous highs. We just came to the conclusion we have no idea how to value it. It's a big Jam Tomorrow share. The technology could be worth vast amounts because, you know, these things are not valued on the value characteristics, are they? So for us, we didn't even give it a score. We just said, we have no idea how to value the share, but personally, I wouldn't touch it. Yeah. Over to you, Paul. I mean,
I actually don't think it should be listed, to perfectly honest, because I think it'll still be cash burning for another 3 or 4 years, or at least 2 or 3, and it may accelerate that. I don't know, but there are sort of like the cutting edge of healthcare, sort of gene therapy, and that is a sort of long, you know, sort of like cycle business.
Yes.
So they should be in private hands, maybe bought by somebody, I don't know. But it is, for me and you, it's almost impossible to decide, okay, what is the fair value? Well, it's anything between zero and like a couple of billion.
Exactly right. Well, you make a great point there, Paul. I think the stock market is not the place for these Jam Tomorrow speculative things, because you can't just assume you can do another round of funding.
Yeah.
It needs to be privately owned with secure venture capital funding for 5 years, whatever. Then sell it to us mugs for about 8 billion.
But, just on the healthcare, I know you quite like hVIVO, which came out with results today. Do you want to take us through your latest thoughts on this one?
Yeah, just the main again, my colleague. It sounds like Dave does all the work, doesn't it? Dave reviewed it today and. He owns a small position personally. I'm looking to buy, but I missed the recent low at 13.5p, and I bought some more Interseed instead with a little scrap of money I down the sofa. But basically, the results we thought were good, they were out today. It's on a PE now, only about 9 or 10. It's got tons of cash in the bank, some of which is company cash, some of which is upfront deposits from customers, but they're not returnable, the deposits, we believe. We think it's halved in price from 30p down to 15p. But the main concern that Dave had with this one was the lumpiness in the order book. Well, they confirmed today that they've actually signed off now most of the things in the pipeline are now securely contracted. So that was our big reservation on it, which today just got ticked off as actually it's okay. So we think there's a nice buying opportunity there. You like this one, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, I know I do. I think the only difficulty is what the biotech sector, how it's faring at the moment, because a lot of those biotech companies are really sort of like struggling. And I know they've got 100% visibility over their sort of like running rule 70. They've got very high visibility.
You're right.
High visibility. The problem is how firm that is, because these things the trials can move and stuff like that. I don't know, but it's a class company and it's a very, very strong management team and it's cheap. So I'm with, and it's got big barriers to entry because you can't just rock up and do some challenge trials on vaccines. So it's got lots of really good qualities. I'm a bit heavy into healthcare at the moment, and I've suffered because of Trump. So, and these guys, unfortunately, have probably suffered because of Trump as well. Or he's half kit, which is Robert Kennedy Jr., isn't it, who heads up the health secretary.
Yeah, I mean, it seems far-fetched to me that would have much effect on the industry, but I don't know anything about the industry. But yeah, I think fellow interviewers, I think, did an interview with Mo, the guy who runs it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
was that today or yesterday? Today, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was today. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to listen to that later. Hopefully, it's on a podcast version because I think that should be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's worked miracles at that company.
No, he's done brilliantly. Yeah, no.
I mean, it was a Jam Tomorrow big cash burner 3-4 years ago. Now it's fabulously profitable. It makes about 20% profit margin. Generate and real profits, you know, cash is being generated. So it absolutely transformed hVIVO has. And yet you look at the chart and you would think it was struggling, which it's not. So I don't understand the way the market values small caps sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Ben Sharma. He's asking a couple of quick thoughts on Gulf Marine Services, which came out results. Was it this week?
Yes, that was yesterday, I think. Very, very, no surprises. $100 million EBITDA as guided, so it was in line. But they have been edging the forecast up. Everyone's worried about business falling off a cliff because of the low oil price, but they don't seem to be affected by it. The great visibility, they've got about 3 years worth of contracts in the pipeline. They are an S every contract win. Every time it goes up to 16, 17, 18p, sellers come out and snuff it out.
Yeah.
Don't know why, because the fundamentals are getting better and better. It's a deleveraging story. They've now got the leverage down to 2x EBITDA. Mm. So it's not distressed at all. Yeah. And the book value of the ships is more than the open market value of the ships is considerably more than book value. That I had that from the horse's mouth when I spoke to the CEO a while ago. Only got his word for it, but got no reason to dispute it. And it's at a 0.7x valuation versus book value. So if you factor in the fact that the ships are worth probably considerably more than book value, you're probably buying this thing at about half its own net tangible asset value.
Yeah,
I think it's insanely cheap. But people say, oh, all services businesses only trade on 4.5x EBITDA. That's true, but the quality of the EBITDA here is so high because there's hardly any maintenance capex. So I think that metric is whereas, you know, other players in the sector might have a clapped out, dilapidated old set of assets, you know. So I think it's terrific. Really, really. And look, in this market panic recently, it drops from 18, 19p down to 15p for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Interesting you're using EBITDA to value your business.
Very good.
Cliche. One thing which is quite interesting, I did read somewhere, and I can't remember where, because they do a bit of, you know, sort of offshore wind, you know, maintenance. They've got one of their rigs, I think, out in the North Sea. What's it? You've got these huge farms, and obviously they're not building that many more at the moment because they can't connect them to the grid. But because these turbines are so massive in the middle of the sea, you know, with salt, they're going to require lots of maintenance. And apparently, this type of rig, it takes about 5 days to service each big wind turbine, and these wind farms are literally thousands of them, you know. So it's actually quite a good alternative usage for these things, you know, because
I asked the CEO about that precise point, and I said, "Look, can your ships be used for that?" He said, "Yes, absolutely." Yeah. My next question was obviously, "Well, how much does it cost to convert them to be able to?" He said, Not that much. You basically put a sort of carrier on the side of the ship, is welded to it, that can carry the big turbines. He says, they can be redeployed. But there seems to be plenty of demand in the Middle East from the oil and gas industry for these things. So no sign of any downturn. You've got a 3-year visibility. I think their order book's over $500 million, which is about 3 years worth. So unless something goes wrong that we haven't factored into it all, it should have paid off all its own debt in about the next 3 years. And the cash flow is fantastic from this company. So I have no idea why it's priced the way it is, but doesn't really matter to me, because whilst it's cheap, I just sit there and do nothing.
Yeah,
and every month that goes by, you know, it's paying off loads of the bank debt. So the fundamentals are just constantly improving. They're talking about divvies as well.
Yeah,
I think starting for next year. So again, it's one of those nice things where the longer you hold, the better the fundamentals get. So
good. Okay, we've got a question from Paul the Parrot. He's asking about boutique corporate finance company Cavendish that look after a lot of the small caps, do research on small caps in the UK. They have a corporate finance team and lots of sort of professional services. What's your sort of latest on this one, Paul? Looks cheap, actually.
It's very cheap. Yeah, no, we're positive on it because it's now trading below net tangible asset value. Mm. And the tangible assets are mainly cash and, you know, creditors and debtors that wash out into cash in days, really. Mm. It's not necessarily the best business out there, but it's certainly one of the cheapest, we think, and obviously highly cyclical. And when you look at the chart on that, you can think to yourself, well, it's only a matter of time, isn't it, before the cycle turns up. They recently put out an update and it was all right. They were saying H2 was similar to H1, whereas Peel Hunt said that H2 was a lot worse than H1.
Yeah.
That's another one that's bigger, but equally cheap. They're fully asset-backed now, these shares, Peel Hunt and Cavendish. I think there's got to be, at some point, they've got to be worth buying, haven't they? I would have thought.
I think what's quite also interesting is that they, I think they're starting to see sort of like light at the end of the tunnel for sort of like fundraisings and IPOs. And the reason why I say that is that rather than just being in London, they've just set up new offices in Manchester and Birmingham. Mm. And that says to me is that they can actually see some more business coming their way. So
it's a promising sign, isn't it? Definitely. It is, they're also talking about, you know, glimpses of light at the end of the tunnel in the IPO market. They've got stuff going away, and that's what we need, isn't it? Some really decent IPOs, not speculative jam tomorrow nano caps, but, you know, proper decent businesses that people think, oh yeah, I'd like to buy into that. That's the key, I think, to bringing fresh cap. One of the keys to bringing fresh capital in. Also, they mentioned private markets. They do quite a lot of advisory stuff for private. It's not just Cavendish and Peel Hunt, not just linked to the public markets, which so I think we're probably at or near the bottom of the cycle for their businesses and for their valuations. So I think it's an interesting area to sniff around and maybe do a bit of tentative buying.
I think all those financial services, asset managers, there's plenty of opportunity there. Okay, good. We got one question from Froggles Boggles. He's a quick sort of nanosecond sort of like comments on Interseed, which I think came out with a trading update or contract wins or something this week anyway. But the price has responded quite nicely.
It has, one of my favourites, long-term bull on this one, I hold personally, ahead of expectations update. People were worried it would lose federal business or a spending slowdown. They're not. They're winning. They've got a nice series of announcements on contract wins. They're expanding into the Far East as well. So, yeah, I love it. I think it's not cheap, but it's a really, really good, credible growth company. And it's doing fine, totally unaffected by all the things that people were worried about. So, Yeah,
good. Okay, we've got one which has again came out with results. We don't talk about it very often. It does fluid power products. It's called Flowtech Fluid Power Pneumatics and Hydraulic Parts that go into industrial applications. It's got a really good shareholder register, stuff full of value investors. Got Harwood guys. It's also got Downing in there. And they've been going through trials and tribulations. They've apparently got a very good CEO, but they've been struggling to get this really sort of like, you know, turning around and generating cash. They cut the dividend. How do you see this one? Very, very cheap for what it is, but
I don't think it is that cheap. Actually, I had a look at it yesterday. Ninth. When was that? Yeah, yesterday. I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but I skim read the results. It's quite a big loss that it reported for calendar 2024, but that was mainly goodwill impairment. So, okay, I can forgive them that, but it does remind us that actually I think the former management tried to do this as a buy and build, but obviously we're no good at doing acquisitions, so which is the worst type of management, really, isn't it? The dividend is cancelled. Q1 2025, it says, was in line. But, you know, the numbers were poor. I mean, the profit was well down. You got no dividends now. The balance sheet stretched, I think. Net debt is 2.6 times EBITDA. That's just too high for me. And they're in that, it's only 15 million quid debt, but net debt, but they're in that uncomfortable position where profits, EBITDA are dropping, which means that the multiple on the debt starts to become a problem. So I've just concluded here, I think the results were poor for 2024. I think it's a stale story. And it's not of any interest to me, I'm afraid. I mean, I wish them well. I hope they do manage to turn it around. But some of these turnarounds you can look at are really credible. You know, you can see, like with Gooch & Housego, it's happening. The order book's up. You know, the earnings are starting to rise. I'd rather invest in that type of turnaround than just follow some of these fund managers into things where they're hoping they can engineer a turnaround.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? You sounded more positive on it, Paul.
I think they'll probably get taken out by either private equity or a trade buyer, would be my guess on it. But
it's too small, though. It's only 30 million market cap, isn't it? I mean,
It's 120 million turnover. If they can get that cash generation and improve the margins, then there's a big upside. But that'd be my take. Now let's move to Norm, which is going through a turnaround. We hardly ever talk about it. Calnex Solutions that do the testing of telecommunications infrastructure, things like, you know, switches and, you know, basically anything, not just the handsets, but everything which goes into the actual main infrastructure stack. Mm. They went through a rough patch of over the last 2 or 3 years, but I think they're quite, they're sort of starting to see some greener shoots going forward. I don't know whether you've had a look at this one at all.
Yeah, I did. You know, I'm really lucking out today because I didn't have time to do any preparation at all for this. Yeah. Every company you've mentioned is something I've researched this week.
Okay, so good.
Yeah, it's ideal. So Calnex, this floated not that long ago, only a few years ago, when it was really nice quality business making £6 or 7 million PBT in both 2022 and 2023. But then much like its larger competitor, I'm thinking it's called Spirent. That was taken over, wasn't it, after it warned on profit at a nice premium. And that their market seems to have just collapsed. And Calnex was like a mini version of that one, so they're suffering too. But the latest update, this was for March 2025 update, was in line, and it said it is seeing a return to growth. And it's confident there'll be more growth in March 2026. So this is worth looking into for people who understand the sector, which I don't. Cavendish has raised the forecast, but only such an immaterial amount. It doesn't really matter. 0.4 million PBT becomes 0.5 million PBT. So you can see these are tiny numbers, nowhere near the 6 or 7 million a year PBT it used to make. And it says it's monitoring the effects of US tariffs. Cashed up balance sheet, it's got 11 million cash, so that's good. That's what, over a quarter of the market cap. I haven't seen enough evidence of a turnaround to make me want to go bullish on it, but I think this is one that's definitely worth the readers, the listeners putting on their watch lists. If we get more signs of tangible improvement in performance, could be good, I think. So yeah, I'm neutral on it at the moment, but I'll keep an eye on it. So your view, Paul?
I think it is very—it's fascinating, this one. I mean, I don't know the—I don't know the technology, you know, super well. But the key top-level drivers that I see are, you know, the 5G rollout, which is the number of, you know, cell sites, because these guys test cell sites, the wireless cell sites, etc. Right. It's like, because to get 5G, you've got lots of, you know, extra density of cell sites. So there's lots of that happening around the world. Plus, obviously, on the fiber backbone, they're moving now from 800 gigabit per second testing equipment to, I think it's like 1.6 terabit per second. So there's a big upgrade on the technology. But more importantly than anything, there's a regulatory issue coming, because what's happening is that, you know, lots of governments, given what's happened with Russia, have started stipulating that most of the sort of like optical fiber network and wireless cell sites are actual critical infrastructure and the data centers. And so these guys are having to test it. And I've seen it through Crestchik with their load banks testing the electricals. These guys, you've got forced regulation now to improve the, you know, performance of all this fiber optical infrastructure around the world in the West. So they should, in theory. And I don't know. The problem is, I don't know their competitive position. They should, in theory, do well. They do make gross margins of 74%, which says to me pricing power. But it's probably, I don't know. I think it is. It's worth people having a look at it.
Yeah. No, it does sound interesting, doesn't it? As I say, I'm not the right person to decide if this has got good turnaround potential or not. But all I would say is there's a glimmer of a turnaround starting based on what it put out this week. So for people who understand it, have a look at it. Let us know what you think. You know, we want to hear the listeners' ideas as well.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've got another one, which is basically, it had results a couple of weeks ago. We were going to talk about it last week, but we ran out of time, which is CML Microsystems. This one does chips, basically, for the low power chips for communications. They go into 5G and they go into radios and to defense and aerospace and industrial applications. They've been suffering from destocking for some time. They came out with a profit warning 2 weeks ago, which was not a surprise. And actually, the shares sold off a bit, but not a great deal.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
They've got good asset backing, and they're suggesting that they're at or very close to the bottom of that destocking, which was then reinforced later in the week by what Raspberry Pi was saying, that they've now stopped seeing the destocking. So this could well be another turnaround. It's pretty cheap. It's on about 14. I don't know about what is it? 5x EBITDA, basically, with a good solid balance sheet on trough earnings. How you see it anyway?
Well, I remember we talked about this a few weeks ago. I've always quite liked CML because of the property assets it's got. It owns the business park that it operates on, and it's developing and selling off that. That's been on the cards for donkey's years. It's finally happening because of planning issues. It's always run net cash, although I think it spent quite a bit of that on an acquisition. I think I might have mentioned to you outside of this thing, the only issue I've got with it is that, and this is one of my bugbears with EBITDA, I know I'm a stuck record on this, the profit warning wasn't too bad. It said, I think it's expecting 5.5 million EBITDA, and it said it's actually going to be 5. And you think, oh, that's not too bad. But by the time it filters through down to earnings per share, it's a 44% drop. And this is the issue, you know, this is why in a profit warning, especially, I never, ever rely on the EBITDA references, because they massively understate the full impact of the drop in earnings. So that's my main issue with it. And it's now only forecast to make about 8p earnings per share, which is down a lot. I don't know what the figure was for the prior year, but I know PE isn't everything, but it doesn't actually look especially cheap to me based on its current level of performance. So the clever bit with these things is working out what's going to happen in future. And if you can come up with some reason as to why it's going to hit the jackpot with a new product that sells like hotcakes, then this could be a multi-bagger, couldn't it? So, I mean, have you got any insights on the product side of things, Paul?
Oh, yeah. Now they're well locked in digital radios, in 5G. They should do well going forward. And particularly when the industrial cycle sort of and the semiconductor side starts improving. And these things make 70% gross margin, so they get huge operational gearing as the top line increases. Right. So, this one's a slow burn. The actual a director or somebody, I think it was a director, bought about 200,000 shares just recently at about £2.20. So it was a big chunk anyway.
That's a very good sign. I think it was a tiny company and somebody spending a few hundreds of thousands. Yeah, that's a big bullish thing. So those type of chips, it's a chip designer, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But it's basically bespoke chips. They don't sell hundreds of millions of these. They're sort of like for, you know, production like 1 million or 2 million for really bespoke niche type applications that go into sort of products for the whole of their lives, which is why they make such good margins.
It's always profitable. I mean, I've been aware of this company for 10 years or more, and it makes a profit every year, doesn't it? So it must have something.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's move to another one which is going through a turnaround, industrial. We've got digital inkjet printer Czar that has jumped up over the last few weeks. I'm guessing it was sold off because of the tariffs, but now it's sort of like recovering. No, maybe it's a bit earlier. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know how you see this one. There's some good shareholders on this one, hoping for... Go on.
We might have talked about this last week, Paul. I can't remember. Did we? I think so. It's basically... I quite like it, actually. I mean, the results were not much cop. It's effectively trading at break-even. But what I think bulls have latched onto, and I can see why they've done this, is there was a lot of quite good stuff in the commentary about all these new printhead designs. I mean, it's been promising blockbuster growth from new products for years. Mm. But it does sound as if it's now maybe starting to happen. And it's got enough cash. I think Czar looks quite interesting, actually. Yeah,
good. Okay, let's move off that one. We talked about it last week. Let's go to Quartix Technology, the telematics company. Trades at about, quite a punchy 20 times, but the shares have done all right, actually, of recently.
They have. I'm really pleased to see this turnaround. It's been the founder came back because he retired, but the new board messed things up, really. So the founder, and it's taken him a while, well, not that long, actually, but he's really just back to basics. He's got the thing growing again. And he did a very interesting presentation on Mellow on Monday, yeah, which you can see the recording for that. So I think it's going places again. It's got its mojo back. I like Cortex. It's not cheap. I think the market has twigged that it's got its mojo back. And the persistent sellers seem to have stopped now. So, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't buy at the current price over £2, but it's firmly on my watch list. On any sort of dip, I think I'd want to be back on board of this. It does some telematics for small fleet operators. I'm actually meeting the company in a few days' time. Okay. So I want to learn more about what differentiates its product, because it makes very good margins, you know. This business is an absolute cash cow, which means the product must be good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's just quickly touch base on building products. We've got Etwin, which does sort of like doors and windows and building products, etc. Should be a play on the housing recovery, which got a bit of a boost quarter one because of the run-up into Help to Buy. And then obviously it seems as though most people are saying that it slowed off immediately after that turning of the new tax year as Help to Buy has been taken off. But it's traded about 8.5 times PE, plays a 5% dividend yield.
It's another one. It's good value. We looked at that this week. My colleague John looked at this one. It's trading well. Calendar 24 results were quite good. And given the tough macro and how difficult building and improvement sector is, I think companies that still manage to eke out a growth in profits really stand out to me. And it said underlying operating profit is expected to be marginally ahead of market expectations. Oh, sorry, that was in January. Then yesterday, I think it reported full year results marginally ahead again. And Q1, it says, is in line. So, yeah, it looks good. Have a look at it. Not a glamorous business, but it makes a nice margin. I think it's double glazing, isn't it? And all those sort of products. Which, you know, if they're doing this well in a really tough macro environment, I think that's intriguing. So, yeah, we like Epwin and a little bit of debt, but only 0.5 times EBITDA. So, yeah, we think it's good value.
Yeah, I think a lot of that sector, actually, the building products and the house builders, if we can get through the new building safety levy announcement in the next few weeks, I think that we've probably found a bottom in this whole sector, because I think anybody who wanted to sell is already out of it. And and then when you do get that, you just say that cyclical recovery, you get a lot of positive gearing, don't you, moving for a long time.
Yeah, and I suppose investors have got to make a choice, haven't they? Do you want to go for the things like SIG, where they're not making any money at all, looks an absolutely rubbish business, but which could have that operational gearing?
Yeah.
You know, and you could see your profits tenfold, the negligible level they are now. Or do you go with the ones like Epwin, like Alimask, that are just trundling along very nicely, making good profits in a lousy market, and where you're going to get the, and you can buy them at bottom of the cycle earnings where they're still doing fine, and you get maybe a less geared improvement, but without the risk. So it's weighing up those two. I mean, do you have any preference on that, Paul? Because you're a bit of a risk taker, aren't you?
I've got lots of small caps. I'm already in the building products. I own Michelmersh Brick, that premium brick manufacturer.
That's very good.
And also, I've got software in the whole infrastructure build, which is Alico. So I'm already in there, to be honest. But I think there's lots of bargains, and you just got to decide where you want to play, I guess.
Yeah, or just buy a basket of them. That's the other way of doing it, isn't it? Four or five, you know, a small position size in four or five things that look pretty similar. And you might think that you're more likely to catch a takeover bid that way as well.
Yeah, you're right. A quick question from Grant asking about Oxford Metrics, which I think is basically they do this technology that goes into helping do sort of advanced graphics. And they did the avatars in...
Did they?
So they've got some pretty good... But the shares just keep falling.
What are they now? 50p or something?
48p.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked at it since mid-February, 19th of February. It was an AGM statement, in line trading. this is September 25 year end, pipelines building, and expects an H2 revenue weighting, which people don't like H2 weightings, do they? Forecast unchanged. Excuse me. The standout feature with OMG is it's stuffed full of cash. Massive cash pile. I have a feeling they might have used a bit of it for an acquisition. A couple of my readers have flagged that they're a bit worried that AI type movement sensing stuff could overwhelm Oxford Metrics type of these specialist cameras, I think, that track movement or whatever. It might have been you who said that, actually. But what do you feel about that, Paul? Is there
I'm not risk? Yes, I think there is. I mean, I haven't looked at it in massive detail, but yeah, that would be my biggest take on it, given what AI can do and sort of like, you know, autonomous cameras and all this sort of stuff. It's above my pay grade how important this one is, but it has got some very good reference sites that it's actually done that it can then use that to sell on. There might well be some very good defense applications it can also use them. But
And management really do have an excellent long-term track record of corporate you know, buying things that are overlooked and turning them around and then selling. I mean, they got a fabulous takeover bid for part of the group that
It
was loss-making and just looked an absolute pile of junk. And they got about 50 million quid for it. So it just shows, you know, you never really know what's in these companies, do you?
Tim Edwington, he's basically asking about XPP, which has basically been absolutely hammered because of the tariffs. I think it does electrical sort of like transformers and big sort of converters from various DCs into other DCs. They're big pieces of kit that go into sort of data centers and to other specific applications. Should do very well in the whole move to electrification, but the shares just keep dropping. So they had a bid as well about a year ago, I think.
Is this the thing that reported today?
I don't know, actually. I don't know.
I think it might be. Let me just open my report for today. I'm thinking of TT Electronics.
Oh, okay,
I can't... XPP you were talking about, aren't you? Yeah, no, I haven't covered that since 21st of February, the trading update for last year. It said it looks in line, operating profit within the range of 25 to 27 million. I think I remember this now. Finance costs are the issue there. They've got a lot of debt and it absorbs a lot of the operating profit in finance. Yeah, too much debt and too difficult was my conclusion. I'm just neutral on that one. Have you looked at it, Paul? XP Power?
The top level, the macro trends should work well for it, i.e. the whole move to electrification. However, you know, I think their biggest, they're Singapore based, and I don't know where their production outlets are. And if it comes from sort of cheap Asia, there's obviously worries the whole thing about sort of tariffs going into the States who really need to upgrade all of their electrical infrastructure. So I guess the chart, when does it become really good value? I don't know, but it did get a bid at £19.50, I think, about a year ago. So somebody put a big number on it, and it's only trading at less than £7 at the moment. So it's significantly,
blimey, the shareholders must be sick as dogs for not forcing the management to accept that.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Okay, very last question we got from Ben Sharma. He's asking about ITV that I did hear got a bit of a hit the other day from a broker downgrade. I'm worried about
I saw those as well. Two brokers downgraded them, but I didn't read into any of that. I hold this one personally. So did you see what those brokers were saying?
They were basically talking about the whole advertising sector being tough in a difficult macro, and also specifically ITVX getting greater sort of competition. But I think those are all well known, to be perfectly honest. But my only take on broker downgrades is it a couple of brokers who are on the buy side, or you know they haven't spoken to the company and just come up with this view. Or are they actually those where, you know, they've spoken to the business and then they're nudging down expectations? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the fundamentals on it are very, very good. We've talked about this a lot before. The 6th of March update said that the 2024 figures were very good. EPS up 23% to 9.6p. So at 60p a share, you're only paying six or seven times. It's only got 0.6 times EBITDA in net debt, so it's not heavily indebted. The pension deficit is completely resolved now. But I don't know what the future performance will be like. So don't know. I haven't seen anything that's made me change my bullish view on it. And there's obviously all this recurring talk of takeover bids or divestments and things. So I'm sticking with ITV. I think it's very cheap, but it's had a bit of a kicking lately. Good yield as well. Very good dividend yield.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got just a comment actually from Riffs Off. He's basically saying about Oxford Metrics, a big driver is that it can be used for training autonomous robots, which is quite interesting, actually, you know, because to make them move like humans without actually hitting humans. So quite a good, that could be a big, sort of driver for them. But I would have to test that. I'd have to look at it myself.
Yeah, I mean, they are boffins. I think the people at OMG are smart. Anything with Oxford in the name, you think, oh, they must be clever.
Yeah. You're right.
They probably went to the poly, though, not the university.
Okay, well, thanks very much, everyone, for your questions. Again, brilliant insights there, Paul, and comments. We covered a lot of material today. Hopefully everybody's portfolio is in green after a nice bounce on the markets. And yes. Look forward in touching base again in a week's time at 2 p.m. on Thursday.
Yeah, well, we timed this perfectly, didn't we? The biggest NASDAQ up 12% overnight. We can actually be happy when we're talking about shares for once.
No, good. All right. See you next week then, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.